California Democrats now have a supermajority in the Senate and the Assembly, and there are more women lawmakers than ever before. On Insight, Cap Radio's Ben Adler talks about day one at the Capitol for this newly elected legislature. Yesterday was day one for students whose schools were destroyed in the Camp Fire. Many of those families are homeless, too, because of the fire. The kids were back in class, though, and we'll hear about the transition. And later, memories of the popular cycling commentator Paul Sherwin. He died Sunday of heart failure. He was just 62. A popular voice and personality known all over the world, including California, where he covered the Amgen Tour of California races. I'm Beth Ruyak. That's today on Insight. First, the news. From Capitol Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. California lawmakers did report to their first day of work in a brand new session at the state capitol in Sacramento yesterday. Most are Democrats, and more are women than ever before. The legislators have a list of significant issues to tackle, including homelessness and housing and wildfires, of course. Cap Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler is here, and we're going to talk more about day one and what's ahead. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Beth.
So what's your quick assessment? You've been to many of these first days for the new class of lawmakers. What about yesterday?
I thought you were going to swear me in first.
Because I lifted my hand, yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting because while there were relatively few new lawmakers this time, particularly in the assembly, there were 8 new assembly members, 9 new senators, but of those, about half had already served in the assembly. So really only, you know, about 13 people new to being a state legislator yesterday. That's lower because, and it's because of our new term limit system where you can serve up to 12 years in each house. And so you've got a lot of people in the assembly who would have been termed out last year who are the first people under this new term limits law. They're going to keep going for up to another 6 years if they want. So even though there were relatively new people, it still felt like a moment of transition, the end of an era and a beginning of a new era. And it's quite simple. It's because of the change in the governor's office. Gavin Newsom presided over the Senate session because, as the current lieutenant governor, he is president of the Senate. And he jokingly reminded everyone, in case you're wondering why the heck I'm here, I am the president of the Senate. And then for a short while, Jerry Brown walked in and stood quietly at the side of the room and watched. He didn't step up to the dais and take a chair, which would have been his right. And Senate President Pro Tem Tony Atkins even joked about that in remarks, making sure, hey, everyone, I would have given you a better chair, but you know, this isn't slighting you. You just want to be off to the side. And it was, you know, and Gavin Newsom, who is not known for being a man of few words, said he'd be brief and then wasn't. And I had heard from his staff that he wouldn't talk with reporters afterward, and then he did. But that said, it really did feel like the changing of the guard, even though the governor won't be sworn in, the governor-elect won't be sworn in until Monday, January 7th, which you can hear live on Capitol Public Radio.
Then what did happen yesterday? And was any of what you just said out of the norm or unusual?
Nothing really was out of the norm or usual. The two inaugural sessions, Senate and Assembly, proceeded the way they always do. But it just had at least to me, it had a different feel.
All right. Let's get more into what was being said. And on the side, I know you have brief conversations with a lot of lawmakers. We don't have recordings of all of those, but they know the heady work that's ahead of them. And with the wildfires being the most recent disaster to the state, that's got to be top of mind for so many people.
Sure. And that's definitely going to be discussed in prevention and liability. So you've got a couple of different angles to that. You had a bill that lawmakers passed on the final night of session that changes the wildfire liability rules for fires that burned and destroyed properties in 2017, and a different set of rules for fires that destroy properties starting in January and in the future. But 2018 was left out, I suspect, because there just wasn't enough time to reach a deal. And lawmakers said, look, we're already through to August. We haven't had any terrible fires yet. Let's just get this bill through and we can revisit if we have to. They're definitely going to have to. That's going to be a major issue. And when I talked with Gavin Newsom yesterday, I asked him about, you know, is it time for a new law on wildfire liability? And he said, I'm not going to rise to the bait. I guess thinking that I was trying to trick him into saying, you know, I want a new law and that's news. But he did say, look, I just want to make sure you all know that this is an urgent issue for me, and I want it to be taken up quickly. Just to circle back, there's one other thing that maybe contributed to the sense of newness at the session. That is the strong supermajorities for the Democrats,
right,
combined with a governor who is perceived to be to the left of Jerry Brown. So I think that in totality kind of made it have a new feel.
Let's cover what a supermajority is.
Yes.
Don't want to assume that everybody understands that and how powerful that is in terms of power. Also, I want to address the number of women lawmakers in this legislature.
So a supermajority is two-thirds of each chamber, and that is the threshold required to raise taxes, put measures on the ballot, constitutional amendments on the ballot, and urgency measures that take effect immediately. And Democrats would need 54 in the Assembly and 27 in the Senate. They have 29 in the Senate and 60 in the Assembly. There's a small chance it'll edge up to 61. We're waiting for the results of one last Assembly race in San Diego County. That's looking most likely to remain Republican at this point with a few ballots left to count, but we'll see. For the exact number of women, I don't have that off the top of my head. Perhaps you do, but it's a lot more than in than in previous years. There had been for a time a healthy number of women in the legislature, never close to 50-50. It's never been that way, but getting better. And then over a few years, it dipped a bit. And this year, it now has begun to climb back.
It is the most ever.
Is it now the most ever?
It is the most ever in this legislature.
Okay.
And one other question. Why was the oath of office given in some cases yesterday by the California Chief Justice and in other cases by Attorney General Javier Becerra?
Well, the Chief Justice gave the oath of office in the Senate and the Attorney General gave it in the Assembly.
Right. Because of the different bodies. Okay.
Can't do it both at the same time, I guess.
Let's get to a little bit of what was said, and let's start with the Assembly Speaker, Anthony Rendon. And he was talking, even though we mentioned these social justice issues, homelessness, housing, let's put poverty on that list. He did talk yesterday about a tech economy and about the place where California needs to keep moving fast and forward.
Well, what he was seeking to do, I think, was to contrast the complete boom in the economy for certain parts of the state, spurred by the tech economy, and the reality for millions of other Californians who are either not touched by it or are touched in ways that are not necessarily ways they want to be touched. So I think it was that contrast that he sought to point out during his speech from the Assembly floor yesterday.
How can we be proud of our vibrant tech economy, the envy of the world, if the undeniably brilliant minds of that sector are used only to generate huge personal wealth for a few and misery for others? We must use our technological resources to improve the lives of workers as well as investors, for the homeless as well as for tourists and the homeowners with extra rooms to rent out.
And so, you know, Rendon really made a point of talking about economic justice and that is going to be a priority for him in the coming year. He also opened his speech asking for a moment of silence for the victims of wildfires in California and also gun violence. But he said that he wanted to go beyond the usual moment of silence, and he asked lawmakers to think about what they will do in the next 2 years. And so that was an interesting moment as well.
There's another name that we're going to be saying more often than we have in the past, and that is Marie Waldron.
Brand new Assembly Republican leader, took over for Brian Daly just a couple of weeks ago after the election because he is going to run in a special election for a soon-to-be-vacated state Senate seat currently held by Ted Gaines, who represents the Roseville area, and it's a district that stretches up to the rural corners of the state. Gaines was just elected to the Board of Equalization, such as the game of musical chairs that happens after elections. So Waldron takes over as Assembly Republican leader. I had a couple of exchanges with her where I was asking you know, some fairly uncomfortable questions, and she gamely took them on. I, for example, asked her about how two previous Assembly Republican leaders say the Republican Party in California is dead. And she said, look, our values have a lot of merit, and you know, listed things that the party stands for. I asked what's the path forward for her party after the election. And here is what she had to say.
There are a lot of issues that are not partisan, and they're some of the biggest issues the state faces. Homelessness, for example, doesn't care if you're Republican or Democrat. The wildfires that we've experienced don't care if you're a conservative or liberal. We have high cost of living. Affordability is an issue for California, rising crime. Those are all things Republicans can be at the table and work on solutions.
And she said, look, we're going to look at what happened in the election and realize that we have to have better messaging. And again, talking about values that cross party lines, like affordability in California. And so it was, you know, and I even asked, you know, to what extent is President Trump responsible for her caucus having 20 members? And she said, look, it's hard to analyze that, but we can't control what happens at the federal government. And California does lead the way. And so she said, look, we just need to make sure we're resonating with Californians and being active in our districts. So I guess when you're I don't know. Anthony Rendon in an op-ed in the SAC B, you know, said, what do you call a supermajority that's beyond a supermajority, a gigamajority? So if Republicans are in the gigaminority, you know, you work together where you can and you focus on your districts and you try to win the next election.
It's a reminder to when Sacramento's mayor, Daryl Steinberg, was presiding as Senate president pro tem. And times passed when, with a supermajority, I wonder how much behind-the-scenes debate there is about choosing issues that they know they can really advance versus without a supermajority, something they might hold back on.
That said, and I think that's absolutely right, I would be shocked if we saw, for example, a vote to change Proposition 13 from the legislature. That, if it happens, is going to be on the ballot. I'd be surprised if we see more broad-based tax increases. We did see the gas tax increase in 2017. It survived the Proposition 6 repeal effort in last month's election. But I think a lot of lawmakers feel, look, we took some hard votes and we're ready to, you know, get back to legislating. You might see some small fee increases on various things. I don't think you're going to see a major broad-based tax increase considered, despite the thresholds in the legislature. Now, if the economy tanks and the budget crumbles, I don't know. There is a fair amount of money in the rainy day fund, about 10% of the budget.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see.
You're listening to Cap Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler. Lawmakers were sworn in yesterday at the state capitol in Sacramento. The governor-elect was there. So let's circle back around to a bit of Gavin Newsom.
Sure. He took questions from reporters on the assembly floor after the end of the ceremony. And it was interesting because he kind of started to signal, well, I know there's been, you know, a lot of folks are counting on me to deliver a lot of things. And let's remember things he promised during the campaign, right? Single payer health care, universal preschool, significant increases in CalWORKs grants. That's the welfare to work program. More money for higher education, an expanded earned income tax credit for working families. I could go on. But here's what he said, kind of seeking to maybe tamp down some expectations for at least the first budget that he will release by January 10th.
I don't want to underpromise in just purely political terms, but I do want to suggest this is an enormous task, a transition, just the personnel issues, the budget, and trying to get all of that right in a very short period of time is profoundly difficult. So I don't want people to feel like we're coming out of the box with, you know, too much, because I think they'll be left wanting.
He is in the process of hiring right now, isn't he?
We know exactly two people who will work for him in his new administration so far. His chief of staff, select Ann O'Leary, and his cabinet secretary, that's the number two post, select Ana Mato Santos, who's a former budget director, director of finance for both Governor Schwarzenegger and Brown.
And I think we only know one detail about the inauguration itself, right?
The date. The date, January 7th, a Monday. We don't yet know to what extent it could or might not be combined with the State of the State. But we do know that the governor must present his budget to the legislature by January 10th. That's 4 days after Gavin Newsom will be sworn in. Really, in effect, budget decisions have to be made right now in order to get for the budget writers at Finance to get everything set for January 10th. So Gavin Newsom is spending a lot of time not just hiring people right now. He's spending a lot of time making decisions about what he wants to include in his very first budget proposal.
Take a look at those projected weather forecasts, too, because we don't know whether this is outdoors on the steps of the Capitol or somewhere indoors. And it is early in January. And so there's a lot still to be learned. OK, this was our day one. This is the first of many, many conversations you and I are going to have about this. So thanks a lot, Ben.
You're welcome, Beth.
That is Ben Adler, Cap Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief. You can find more coverage of day one at the legislature and ongoing coverage of what happens under the dome at capradio.org. This is Insight on Cap Radio. Listening to Insight on Cap Radio, I'm Beth Ruyak. It was important to get kids from Paradise, California back to school after the campfire, and yesterday that happened. Education and community leaders had organized a network of places to take in as many of the 3,500 boys and girls as planned to attend school. We're going to be joined in a few moments by Superintendent of the Butte County Office of Education, Tim Taylor. In the meantime, in the studio with me to begin the talk is Kendra Britt, the Community Affairs Director at the Placer County Board of Education, but she's been on loan to Paradise Unified School District as the Interim Public Information Officer. Hi, Kendra.
Hi, good morning.
Glad to have you here. And Tim Herrera is here, too. He is Communications Director for the Sacramento County Office of Education, also on loan and helping out in Butte County. Hi, Tim.
Hi, good morning.
So both of you were there yesterday. Share with me some stories. What did you see? What did you hear?
Well, actually, we've been there for a couple of weeks shortly after the fire broke out. We've been pitching in, helping with school communications because it's just been such a massive, massive problem. It's a widespread community. And so we help to get information out to the families and the community and to the media locally and beyond.
Kendra, how did that happen? Did you see this disaster and just decide, I've got to go?
Yes, I first started off trying to help people locally and in my office in Placer that were now hosting displaced family members. So that was my first effort. And then I found out my colleagues were heading up to help as far as communications and public relations and helping manage the situation. They were just inundated with media requests, as you can imagine. A huge, huge onslaught of media trucks and camping out. And so I went up to help Butte County to help Tim, who was getting called up. He knows Tim Taylor previously from working together at Sacramento County. So we just went up and said, whatever you need. Excuse me. That was over 3 weeks ago, and they still need us.
Initially, this was about survival and just making sure people were getting out safely and the fire being put out. At what point, Tim, was there enough ability to stand up, look around and say, we got to figure out how to get these kids back into a classroom, back with a teacher, back to some structure?
Well, I think the initial shock was just a real punch in the gut for people up there. And, you know, the survival was the first thing, getting people out, getting out of the smoke, finding a safe place to be, finding shelter. And then once people started to kind of get their faculties together, you know, the school community just got together right away and said, okay, our primary objective is to get kids in school as soon as possible. It won't be in their own regular school, but we have to get them in a setting with their teachers as fast as we can to give them some sense of normalcy or as normal as we can be. And so it started pretty quickly.
So tell me about the network, how far and wide kids are. And I've heard in some cases it might just be a couple kids in a classroom or in one group. In some situations, like the Paradise Elementary School, a lot of the school has been relocated.
Yes, yesterday was a big day for Paradise Unified School District. I think the hope of getting them back to a routine. Kids love school, and so giving them something that they could look forward to, people were really, really looking forward to December 3rd. So Paradise Elementary School students started at a new school yesterday called Bird Street Elementary in Oroville. Some students went up to Cedarwood, which is the only school still standing in the Paradise Unified School District. That opened up in Magalia yesterday. Then we also have a shared facility in Durham. Durham Elementary opened their doors, so essentially two schools, one school within a school, basically, two principals sharing a campus. And then the 6th through 12th graders are doing an online learning model for the next 2.5 weeks until they can secure a brick-and-mortar location for them. So they will break in 2.5 weeks for a regularly scheduled holiday break. So it'll give the district officials some more time to secure a location for them.
Charter school students. There were a lot of them.
There were 1,000 charter school students displaced. And Margaret Fortune from the Fortune Charter Schools here in Sacramento went up, and I was in a meeting with them, all the charter leaders, and she helped facilitate temporary housing for all of these school sites. And I have to say that the community up there has really jumped in to help. Neighboring churches, you name it, wherever they could find space, they're putting kids there. And so you've got the 14 school districts up there, plus you have 19 different charter schools. And so all of this combined, and plus the private schools. And so they all had to scramble to find places to put these kids. And what's really great is yesterday we were at the Bird Street School, and, you know, it escapes me the name of the building down the street, which is associated with the church, was turned into a temporary school site. And so these teachers walked in, and the places were already filled with donated books, donated furniture, supplies. So these teachers walked in already with an outfitted classroom. And then you saw rows of backpacks, you know, all kinds of backpacks with, you know, superheroes and cartoon characters on the back, lined up on the floors everywhere so that each kid will have a backpack and supplies. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the outpouring of community spirit up there is tremendous. But I have to say, the outpouring of support from local counties, neighboring counties, the state, throughout the country has been fantastic.
Yeah, two moments that stood out for me yesterday at Bird Street Elementary. I mean, many, because it was such an emotional day reuniting these students when they saw the familiar yard duty welcoming them and seeing their teachers. It was incredible. And I think that was a sigh of relief for a lot of people who have been working so hard, tirelessly, at every hour of the day to get these facilities secured for December 3rd. Two moments stood out for me. I went into a classroom, and on the desk, individual little notes written, words of encouragement from another school. And when I looked at it, they were from Rockland Elementary. And so for me, that was, I mean, it kind of gives me tears now, because that was my connection to Placer, and to see that love being carried to those kids. The other moment is I saw a woman crying, and I went up and just gave her a hug. That's kind of what you do now up there. You just give people hugs. And I said, "What, you know, are you okay? Is this just hard to be back?" And she said, "No, I'm looking around in these books everywhere. Their shelves are just full of books." And I said, "Yeah, wasn't that here? I was actually thinking that was so neat. You came in and there was all these books." She goes, "No, I came in 3 days ago and these shelves were empty." She's a librarian. And so for her, she has a library again and she can do her job. And she was just so emotional. I mean, they were, you know, separated out by grade level and what's appropriate reading levels. And she was just so overwhelmed by that moment. It was incredible to see. So that was pretty special.
That's Kendra Britt. She is on loan from the Placer County Board of Education. The Rockland School she mentioned is in Placer County. She has been working as the interim public information officer as the schools reassemble in Butte County after the campfire. I'm also talking with Tim Herrera, who is communications director for the Sacramento County Office of Education, but he's taken a lead role helping out in Butte County. What were the students saying? You said it was emotional, but Tell me more about that experience.
Well, it was interesting to watch the kids because they were so excited to see their friends and their teachers that they would leap into their teachers' arms, mm-hmm. you know, and they were so excited to see their friends. Yet you saw some kids who, you know, were kind of clutching their parents' legs a little bit tighter. And so they were really apprehensive because this is a school, but not their school. It was their friends, but they were in a different setting. And so it was foreign territory for them. But, you know, there's so much beneath the surface right now for these kids and well below the surface that another great part of the partnership with all of our counties is and throughout the state is we're all sending mental health specialists up there to work with these kids. And they'll be embedded there for a long, long time because these kids and the staff will need support for a long, long time. The emotional trauma that they've gone through is something we can't even fathom. So fortunately, there's just support everywhere for these folks.
How is this happening? Most of these children come from families that lost homes. And how are they not only living in a temporary situation, but then being moved to school and back? What's the bigger picture of that network?
It's a crazy amount of collaboration. You know, every morning I sit in on a conference call of all these different departments and agencies that are working together, whether it's housing and transportation and healthcare and fiscal services, and they're all coordinating an effort. You know, for the kids who have to go long distances, they're providing buses. They're working to provide gas cards for the families so that they can take their kids to school. It's just a tremendous amount of organization. And, you know, I have to say that the people from FEMA and the people from the Office of Emergency Services have taken such great leadership out there to show how to organize these things. But there's no playbook for a lot of these things. It's just been tremendous. And the impact has just been so great. And so a lot of it is kind of play as you go and figuring things out. But there's been great coordination to help all these families.
Are there specific needs right now?
How much time do you have?
Yeah. I think there's been such a mixed message about we have enough stuff, we need cash, versus there are needs for kids being back in school. So what can you just say to people who want to help?
I think that's a tough question right now because I know everybody feels a call to help, but it is kind of at a point where we don't need more stuff right now because these folks don't even have a place to store it if they were given it. So now what we need is places to put fifth wheels. A lot of the Paradise families are purchasing fifth wheels as their next form of housing to get them out of shelters and or hotels. So you know, there's big needs like that. We had students traveling in from Sacramento and Redding yesterday that are still living with family members and doing the best they can. But it was important for the parents to get them to their school. So, you know, that's why gas cards are such a huge bonus for those families to help them. With the holidays coming up, a lot of people want to help with holiday gift giving to give these kids a great Christmas. And so I think that's where some of the efforts are now just because of the timing where we are.
I'm talking with Kendra Britt and Tim Herrera. Let's talk about the collaboration that's outside of the county and outside of those school districts.
Yeah, you know, last week, our superintendent, Dave Gordon, Sacramento County, and superintendents from Elk Grove Unified, Folsom Cordova, San Juan, and Center announced a sister schools program where students from our region are going to go up and visit with kids up in Butte County. Rallies. They might do it through Skype. They might do pen pals. But we're going to start establishing relationships that will carry through the school year. In fact, it starts this week where we've got kids from Elk Grove and Center Joint Unify going up there, leadership teams, drill teams, dance teams, whatever, to go up there and just connect with these kids and give them that emotional connection and let them know that there are people their own age who care about them. Living down here.
I understand we have Superintendent from Butte County, Tim Taylor, on the phone with us. Hi, Tim. So glad you could make a few minutes to join us here.
How you guys doing? Thanks for having me on.
So glad to have you. And give us the bigger view, your experience of yesterday with the kids finally back in school.
Well, it was really heartwarming. That's the best word I can describe it. And to watch the parents who've gone through so much the last 3 weeks, get their kids ready for school, and then watch them walk away, you know, leaving their kids for the first time in 3 weeks. It's just like the first day of kindergarten with our own kids. So it was very powerful to watch that and very motivating. And then we did a lot of scrambling around, make sure teachers have everything they need. And we have great teams supporting them. And if teachers ask for something, we're running to stores to get it for them. So it's a great team effort up here, and it's wonderful to see the kids in class.
There have been some emotional moments in this hour, Tim, as Tim Herrera and Kendra Britt talk about the experience of putting this together. What kind of attendance did you have? Because I know there was some question about how many kids would actually be able to make it to school.
Yeah, I think across the board, between the charters and public schools, we'll probably hit 60%. You got to know that some parents are still scrambling to get housing. I was at one school yesterday where kids got up at 3:30 from Rockland, Shingle Springs, and Stockton to get to school. That's how much it meant to them. So everyone's still struggling to get housing. There's nothing, I think, that's best for those kids to be back with their teacher and their friends. So parents are doing the best to do that. And I think the other challenge we have is there's a lot of traffic up here now. We pretty much displaced 25,000 or more people into Butte County. So we're not used to traffic. Here, traffic's usually a stop sign. So now it takes a lot longer to get around. And we're very proud of the local bus system because they are going to have free buses for the rest of the month to help us coordinate all this with the parents and kids.
Tim, you know, I was thinking about the last time that we had a couple conversations on the air on Insight, and I know you remember it well, too, because it was during the Oroville Dam crisis. And so many of the same families that just experienced the loss in the campfire had been evacuated and were going through the unknown struggle of that time, too. This is so much for people there. Can you give me a gauge of that and how you help the grown-ups and the kids through it all?
Well, we're very resilient, I would say. The people up here are really tough. But I think what we have to step back prior to the dam and prior evacuation and prior to this, our county was had the highest childhood trauma rates in the state. So our county was the highest, higher than L.A., San Diego, the Bay Area. As a rural community dealing with high unemployment, a lot of drug and alcohol issues here, and really lack of resources that you would see, such as in Sacramento, we were already dealing with that. And then we had the evacuation of the dam, which was traumatic. We've had three other fire evacuations in parts of the county. I think I've had one district that's been evacuated five times since February 2017. Mm-hmm. A little banger, which has about 80 kids. And then now this. And so all the trauma specialists from throughout the country are saying there's not a blurred line anymore. What we've faced here will need a lot of resources and help. And this trauma and child rate scoring that you get comes based out of research out of San Francisco. And it's kind of the way they're driving mental health in communities. And there's a lot of we've set a nice foundation to address that. But now we've really got our hands full with what happened on November 8th.
Sometimes in this window of immediate post-survival, looking ahead can mean just getting through the day or getting through a couple hours. So is your school plan right now, Tim, really just to get the kids steadied up to the holidays, just get to Christmas or holiday break?
Yeah, our intention is really to provide them with the security and safety that schools provide. And then the hope will come as we rebuild and as we expose children to great things that really are dear to them, like the arts, you know, dance, music, singing. I just popped into a class, though, and the teacher was doing a great lesson with the kids. Kids were dialed in. I'm going to walk over to a little school right now, and I've got letters from throughout the country that I'm going to hand out to kids, and the principal just started crying because that's what the kids really need is the humanness of love from outside of what we got here. And so looking forward to doing that. I just got a letter. You'll love this, Seth. My assistant just came in. A school in Provence, France, an international bilingual school with 70 different nationalities, has made cookies and has raised money. That's the cutest little picture. I'll try to get it faxed over to you guys, put on your website. These four kids, they bake cookies in France and are sending us gift cards for kids. And she put, the strength of Butte and the humility has led us into the holiday season with the hope for a brighter future. We wish you all good health, comfort, and the quickest possible return to normalcy. And so the videos that we've been putting up have been reached all the way to France, and very touching. Gosh, those cookies look good. And actually, right. on the cookies, it says Butte 2018. Mm. Isn't that nice? Mm. That's beautiful. I just got this a second ago. I wanted to read that to you from a teacher in Provence, France.
Yeah, I think the world has felt connected in its heartbreak and then in turn its hope for the area. So, Kendra, what about those conversations about the holidays or beyond, about rebuilding or seeing a new vision of the community? Are you hearing that?
Yes, I think that's one of the most important things is, especially with the start of school yesterday, is I think that was the first day truly of the road to recovery. I think getting the kids back to their safe place, seeing the parents, the joy in their faces, of seeing their kids happy again. And so I think that was a big turning point. That was a big day for us, you know, and then we'll go a couple weeks and then have a break again. I personally feel that there will be another influx of students coming back January 7th when we return after the holidays. I think some people just needed more time, like Tim said, to get housing situated to, you know, the fire started the weekend of Veterans Day and then it came up, you know, Thanksgiving holiday was shortly after. So I think some people just went away for a while to just kind of figure out what their next steps are. And once they see the schools are in place, you know, things are moving forward, it'll help everyone have a sense of hope to rebuild that community. Because, you know, if you have kids going to a school, the school is usually a big part of a community. And I think that was a big turning point yesterday.
All right. That is Kendra Britt. She has been on loan in Butte County from Placer County Board of Education. I've been talking with Tim Herrera, who also is on loan there from Sacramento County. And Tim, just a real quick note, if other schools want to get involved and somehow give or connect,
why don't they just call the Sacramento County Office of Education? Okay. They can find my number and I can connect them with the people up in Butte County. Like I say, the outpouring has been tremendous, but the need is great for these kids to connect with other kids, and it would be really helpful.
All right.
Beth, on that note, I'm going to meet with a group of kids from Paradise High who develop a wall of these letters to keep up for a couple months, and they're going to get very artistic, and we're actually going to post photos and send them back to the school that sent them throughout the world. So we're going to try to keep these things up so they don't just get tossed in, on a shelf at our county office here.
I think it's inspiring, and that inspiration will be needed for a long, long time.
Can I tell you one great story? Do you have time or do you have to go?
Go ahead, Tim.
So the maintenance guy at Core Butte Charter introduced himself yesterday, and there's a photo of the principal, a teacher, and him with fire extinguishers and a hose and the raging fire coming at their campus, and they single-handedly pushed that thing back and actually, I think, helped save the school. And as the principal and sub left to go make sure the kids got, the maintenance guy stayed. And next door was a mobile home with over 100 seniors in there. He personally went over there, and he decided to put them on the school grounds because of the blacktop and handed out bottled water and stuff. And would have never found out that story because he's too humble, but his principal had me introduce him. And I just think there were so many stories up the hill that you'll hear about over the next year.
Right.
But for a man to do that, and with all the mayhem up there, and really not to even ask for any accolades or anything, he just did it, really took me back yesterday. I was in the middle of his gym with 300 kids, and looking at that guy, I just said, God, you're a true hero. So there's so many great educators and first responders to things, and that one in particular really was great. And we thank you for all the support in Sacramento. You guys have been wonderful. Really appreciate it.
All right, Tim, great to talk to you. I look forward to doing it again as we continue to hear the progress. And good luck in these next couple weeks of school up there. It's always a pleasure to have you on Insight.
Thank you, Beth. Have a good day.
That is superintendent of the Butte County school system, which is now getting back on its feet after day one of classes yesterday. That was Tim Taylor. Kendra, Tim, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy holidays
you
to you.
You too.
This is Insight on CAP Radio. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Tomorrow, the course for the 2019 Amgen Tour of California will be announced in Santa Clarita, which is thought to be the city where the race will begin this year. That's unconfirmed, though. Cycling fans in California and all over the world, meanwhile, are feeling heartbreak from the news that commentator Paul Sherwin died Sunday night at his home in Uganda. Paul joined Phil Liggett in covering the world's biggest cycling races. He had commentated more than 30 Tour de France races and, in fact, as a professional cyclist himself, had competed in 7 tours. So the messages and tributes are circulating all around the world. On the phone with me are longtime cycling journalist from Sacramento, James Rea. Hi, James. Glad to have you with us today.
Good morning, Beth.
And former professional cyclist and U.S. team coach Mike Sayers, who now owns Dye Endurance in Sacramento, is on the phone, too. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Beth. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Mike, I know you had a nice friendship with Paul Sherwin. Will you tell me a bit about your experience with him?
Actually, my fondest memory of Paul is maybe the first time I met him. I was a young cyclist, and in 1992, I believe we were doing Olympic trials. It was a strange configuration. It was 5 races. Anyway, the last race I ended up 5th. I was an amateur rider against the biggest teams in the world, and he was the press officer for the Motorola cycling team at the time. And my reaction was basically that I thought I had just won the Tour de France by getting 5th in a single day event. And he turned to his riders at the time and he pointed at me and he just said, "I wish you guys would get that excited when you would win races." And he only got 5th. And that was the first time I ever had an interaction with Paul. And then over the years, we had crossed paths on countless occasions at races, events, and training camps, media events, things like that. So he was the voice of cycling for most of the globe. And that really, I think that is an accurate representation. He was a global icon, and it's a real tragedy that we won't be listening to him on the weekends anymore, commentate events.
His banter with Phil Liggett was smart. It was informed. They had all the behind-the-scenes knowledge, but they were lively, and they were funny. And we found a clip of Phil and Paul Sherwin talking with Frankie Andreu on NBC Sports at the Amgen Tour of California in 2016. So we're going to play it for you. The first voice that you'll hear is that of Paul Sherwin.
Crazy race so far, really difficult to actually figure out who's going to win, when the breakaways are going to stay away or not stay away. I think today, though, when we look at the individual time trial, all of a sudden we're going to start to see the men who are going to win this race.
The men who are going to win this race is a big toss-up. Tell me a little about your little booth here. Plus, you got the lights are coming in. I'm already sweating, and I've been here for like 5 seconds. You guys must come out of here drenched.
Well, the thing is, Frankie, coming from the UK, it's okay for sure when he comes from Africa, but I'm freezing, so I want the heat. He wants the AC. We fight for the first 3 hours of the day. We reach a compromise, and then we think about the Amgen. I mean, all this technical stuff is strictly for showing. It's like flying an aeroplane in here. As long as I can see one television screen and get the names right, I'm happy.
No, it does seem, I mean, you have a lot of information here, but really a lot of it, I mean, Paul, it comes from right here. It comes from the top of your head.
Well, we do remember. I mean, I've been at the Tour de France 38 years this year. Phil Liggett, 44th Tour de France this year. So there's a fair amount up there, but, you know, getting a bit old, getting a bit slow, so I like to remember some stuff. And, of course, today's exciting for me because Folsom City, got to think about Johnny Cash.
What about the penitentiary?
What about the money? Johnny Cash, you know, he was only in jail. What talk about folklore and how it really changes history. Johnny Cash was only held in prison overnight. I thought he'd been hung up for murder or something like that, but, you know, it's all about the stories, really.
It is all about the stories. And, of course, the Amgen Tour of California, one of the best stories. You two bringing those stories to life to all of our viewers at home. I'm Frankie Andrea, and we're rolling with the tour presented by VisitCalifornia.com. Thank you, Paul and Phil.
Ah, oh, to hear those voices again. James, let me bring your voice into this conversation. And what a mark. Paul and Phil made together, but Paul Sherwin holding his own with the great commentator Phil Liggett always.
That's exactly right. When I first met Paul, and I met Phil first, but I met Paul a few years later. Actually, I thought they were brothers. I mean, they don't look particularly alike, but they're so close. And they, as you may know, when they drove around the world, they had such a friendship. Paul would do the driving, and Phil would say that he was sleeping, but he was probably studying a race and getting the names and the statistics right. But I just remember those guys. They were the best at what they did. They were, as they would say, they were best mates. And I've known both of them for more than 30 years and had nothing but admiration for Paul. And certainly when I see them, one thing that everybody's been talking about is that those two guys, if you saw them at a bike race or if you had dinner with them or a beer or whatever it might have been, they remembered who you were and right. what you did and asked about, you know, how are things in Sacramento? How is your friends? How is your wife? You know, how's your running, or you know, what are you up to? They would take more interest in you, and they did it with many people than they did with their celebrity.
So I was covering the Tour de France for NBC Sports in 1990, and there was a production assistant named Catherine Love on our team. And I think you guys know where I'm going with this, because Catherine met Paul, and over the course of that tour, they fell in love and were married, and they have two children, a son, Alexander, a daughter, Margot. And so my heart was heavy at the news for them as well. And you're right, when Paul and Phil would come to Sacramento, just a smile, an instant hug, a recognition. And Mike, that's certainly how they were to the cyclists whose lives they followed so closely.
Yeah, it's quite amazing when you think about it, because cycling is a global sport now, and the sport actually operates at the highest level for almost 10 months a year. And both Phil and Paul would travel the globe and do races in every country, from China or from Australia, really in January when it kicks off, to China when the season ends in October, November. And they would go and they would know riders' names, where the teams that they used to ride for, the country. So we're literally speaking of thousands of riders in a given season after season, like you just heard, 30 and 40 years of remembering those riders. And then riders, like every athlete, football or golf or baseball, they retire and they move on to other things. And yet Phil and Paul would remember those riders and remember where they came from and what they did. And it is really shocking to think at how much information they had to produce while they're commentating these events, because cycling is a live event when it's happening, and you need to be able to know what's happening. Sometimes the race is in full flight with a lot of action going on, and they were just amazing at their recollection of riders, teams that they had ridden for, races they had won or even not won, even more importantly. So it is really amazing to think that Paul is not going to be around, and we're not going to hear that silky smooth voice that he brought to the television.
On Monday, Phil Liggett tweeted, "I went to bed in Africa with a heavy heart last night, feeling sadness like never before. My teammate for 33 years was no longer with me." I hope his family is feeling the love everywhere. James Rea and Mike Sayers, thanks for spending a few moments to remember him here on behalf of the cycling community in California.
Thanks for including me, Beth. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Beth. Thanks for covering this. It's really amazing that Sacramento has a supporter like yourself to bring this kind of experience to the community. Thank you very much.
That is Mike Sayers and James Rea, and that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruriak. Our producers are Jen Picard, Cody Drabble, and Bert Johnson. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Our engineers, Matt Piscini and Anthony Van Hook. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. Thanks for joining us. Hey!